content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Doris Hyde from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the NBC News Harriet Baskus article on Delta's new rules. There's a letter on the NFB response, a letter from the Guide Dog Users Incorporated, and a retinitis pigmentosa patient in North Dakota is getting a retinal implant to restore a minimal amount of his vision. That was published in the Bismarck Tribune. And I'm going to finish up with a joke to lighten up the mood after all the regulations and rules that Delta has imposed on guide dog travelers. Today's reading of Vision News is underwritten by an anonymous gift in loving memory of Joe and Kelly. From NBCNews.com, growls are growing over Delta's new rules for flying with service animals by Harriet Baskus. Travelers and advocates are baring their teeth at Delta's new rule that passengers with service animals must submit paperwork 2 full days before flying. While some flyers are cheering Delta Airlines' new stricter rules for those traveling with service or emotional support animals, many longtime guide dog users and organizations that advocate for travelers with disabilities say the guidelines, which require added documentation and pre-planning, are overreaching, discriminatory, and illegal. Citing a significant increase in the numbers and types of, quote, comfort animals passengers bring on planes, an 84% increase in reported animal incidents, such as urinating, defecating, biting, and attacks, Delta announced last week that certification of a flyer's need for an animal and proof of an animal's training and vaccinations will be required for both service and emotional support animals. However, organizations such as the National Federation of the Blind believe elements of Delta's policy, which goes to effect March 1st, violate the Department of Transportation's Air Carrier Access Act. We are particularly troubled by the requirement that guide dog users submit paperwork to Delta 48 hours before flying, the NFB said in a statement, noting that travelers without guide dogs are not required to plan their travel 48 hours in advance. The 48-hour intent to fly requirement means guide dog users will no longer be able to fly on Delta for family, medical, or other emergencies, said the NFB. We stand with NFB, said Eric Lipp, executive director of the Open Doors organization. People with properly trained service animals are being punished by Delta, noting that it has long been concerned with the abuse and fraud of animals purporting to be service or support animals. The American Council of the Blind also said Delta's revised policy discriminates against passengers with legitimate service dogs and makes travel more difficult for individuals who rely on their service animals for travel. I sympathize with the airlines, said Pat Pound, a disability consultant who is blind and travels with a guide dog. More people are cheating. Airlines are trying to maintain the system, but I don't think Delta's new policies will address the problem. And as a person with a disability, I'll end up being penalized. An online petition with more than 75,000 signatures is asking Delta not to make it harder for people to travel with emotional support animals, but other airlines are already exploring following Delta's lead. We agree with Delta's efforts, American Airlines said in a statement. We are looking at additional requirements to help protect our team members and our customers who have a real need for a trained service or support animal. The carrier said from 2016 to 2017, it saw an almost 15% increase in the number of customers traveling with emotional support animals. United Airlines is reviewing its existing policy on service and emotional support animals, said airline spokesman Charles Hobart. This is something that is important to our employees and to our customers, including those with disabilities and those who do not have disabilities, he said. We understand this needs to be resolved soon. The Department of Transportation had planned to draft new rules on service animals by July 2017, but those guidelines have yet to be released. Going forward, I suspect there will be legal challenges to Delta's policy on service dogs from individuals and from organizations, said disability consultant Pound. This is how an airline is deciding to interpret the law, but a court may have a different idea about what the law intended. For immediate release, National Federation of the Blind statement on Delta's new service animal policy. Dateline Baltimore, Maryland, published January 23, 2018. The National Federation of the Blind stated the following with regard to the new service and support animal policy announced by Delta Airlines on January 19th. We are deeply concerned that Delta Airlines has taken this action without consulting the National Federation of the Blind, our division, the National Association of Guide Dog Users, or any other democratically elected representative of blind Americans. Blind people have safely and successfully used guide dogs for decades, but this policy fails to make a clear or practical distinction among guide dogs, other service and support animals, as Delta puts it, and pets. Onerous restrictions on guide dog handlers do not resolve anything and violate the principle of equal access for passengers with disabilities. Furthermore, we believe that elements of Delta's policy as currently articulated violate the Air Carrier Access Act. We are particularly troubled by the requirement that guide dog users submit paperwork to Delta 48 hours before flying. Travelers without guide dogs are not required to plan their travel 48 hours in advance. Furthermore, guide dog users will no longer be able to fly Delta in family, medical, or other emergencies. We believe that this 48-hour requirement is both unnecessary and unlawful. We are asking for an urgent meeting with Delta and stand ready to work with it and other airlines to craft fair and reasonable policies to address the concerns of air carriers, their personnel, and their passengers without imposing undue, unsupported, and unlawful hardships on guide dog users. Signed, Chris Danielson, Director of Public Relations, National Federation of the Blind, 410-659-9314, extension 2330, or 410-262-1281, cell phone. Mail cdanielsen at nfb.org. News release January 23, 2018. For further information, contact Penny Reeder, President, Guide Dog Users Incorporated, 866-799-8436. Email president at guidedogusersinc.org. Guide Dog Users, Inc. finds Delta Airlines' new policy regarding service and emotional support animals particularly burdensome for guide dog users and unlikely to solve problems associated with out-of-control and misbehaving animals on planes. On Friday, January 19th, Delta Airlines released information regarding revised policies concerning service and emotional support animals who fly with their companions inside the cabins of Delta planes. These new requirements are expected to go into effect on March 1st. Delta explained that the new policies have been developed to assure safety for all of their passengers and onboard crew members. Guide Dog Users Incorporated, GDUI, wishes to respond to the policy changes announced by Delta. First, our members who depend on our guide dogs for safe, independent travel certainly agree with Delta's goals of assuring safety for all passengers. Like every other airline passenger, we care about safety for ourselves and for our guide dogs as well. And we too have encountered an increasing prevalence of misbehaving and uncontrolled animals, often fraudulently identified as emotional support animals or comfort animals by their owners in airports and on planes. These experiences have frequently been unpleasant and sometimes have been even compromised our safety and that of our guide dogs. We too believe it is our right to expect the planes on which we fly to be safe, non-threatening environments. Delta's new requirements, however, would represent significant burdens for us as people who are blind, who have been permitted for decades to travel on public conveyances and in public venues with our guide dogs in the lead without onerous paperwork requirements. A requirement that we supply current vaccination records for our guide dogs online 48 hours in advance of the first flight we take in any given year, and that we certify the airline's possession of these records upon check-in for every flight, is especially burdensome as we will no longer be able to take advantage of curbside or kiosk check-in. We may need to be separated from traveling companions, and the whole check-in process is likely to require longer lines and more time than would be the case for people traveling without guide dogs. In addition, the new requirements represent logistical problems, which we wonder how Delta would address. For example, when during the course of long-distance travel, we are unexpectedly transferred to a Delta plane for which we had no reservations and for which we have not submitted the required documentation, or if we are traveling on a Sunday or a holiday when our vets cannot be reached, or in the all-too-likely circumstance that the airline cannot locate or access the forms we had already submitted. We are skeptical that requiring submission of vaccination records and, in the case of emotional support animals, some kind of certification that the animals have been trained to behave well in public will actually reduce the incidence of ill-behaved and uncontrolled animals on board planes. In our experience, the unfortunate consequences of traveling with uncontrolled animals have resulted not because of disease or lack of vaccinations, but rather because misbehaving animals have not been trained for exposure to noisy airports or crowded planes, and their owners have not been able to bring them under control. Further, we are skeptical that a veterinarian certification that an animal who is not trained to provide service to a person with a disability has sufficient training to behave well in public would be a valid certification. Won't it be just as easy for a person who wants to bring his or her untrained pet along on a trip to procure the same kind of fraudulent certification of training as he or she may have already obtained online, or for some disreputable source to verify a presumed disability? In short, we question how these invasive paperwork requirements will actually address the safety concerns that we share with the airline, or resolve the problems that occur on board because of misbehaving, uncontrolled animals. Yet, we are sure, because of our own experiences as people who are blind, that the new paperwork requirements may well be extraordinarily inconvenient for us, since some of us may encounter significant difficulties with online submission of paperwork which may not even be accessible to our assistive technologies, since it will take us longer to get through the check-in process, and we will have to give up the convenience of curbside or kiosk check-in, and the comfort of managing the whole check-in process in the company of travel companions. The Air Carrier Access Act of 1986, which is the legislation that guarantees our right as guidance service animal users to fly in the company of our well-trained and well-cared-for dogs, prohibits discrimination on the basis of disability. We suggest that imposing these exceptionally burdensome and unnecessary regulations, which we believe have little likelihood of resolving the problems of misbehaving, uncontrolled animals on planes, may represent discrimination against us on exactly the basis of our disabilities. It is clear to us that Delta's intentions are good. It is equally clear to us that the solutions which Delta proposes are unlikely to remedy the problems associated with ill-behaved and uncontrolled animals on planes, and further that the new requirements are especially burdensome for guide dog users. We have shared our concerns with the Aviation Consumer Protection Division at the U.S. Department of Transportation, DOT, which implements the ACAA. We look forward to sharing our concerns and offering advice and commentary on new ACAA regulations, which the DOT will propose later this year in a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, NPRM. The DOT has indicated that they will begin accepting comments on proposed regulations as soon as July. We believe that our collective experience as guide dog handlers and frequent flyers equips us with the kind of practical knowledge that will allow us to participate constructively in discussions that will lead to solutions, and we look forward to our involvement along with other disability advocacy organizations in the Department of Transportation's upcoming rulemaking process. Meanwhile, we urge our members to share their concerns with Delta and the Aviation Consumer Protection Division at the U.S. Department of Transportation. https://airconsumer.dot.gov/es-complaint/consumer-form.cfm. And we hope and expect that Delta will take our concerns into account before they implement these exceptionally burdensome requirements for guide dog users in March. Guide Dog Users Incorporated, GDUI, is the leading membership-driven organization of guide dog handlers in the world. Members, most of whom are blind or visually impaired, rely on guide dogs for independence and safety. Guide Dog Users International strives to promote civil rights and enhances the quality of life for working guide dog teams. Drawing on the experiences and varied knowledge of its members, GDUI provides peer support, advocacy, and information to guide dog users. In addition, GDUI works with public entities, private businesses, and individuals to ensure that guide dog users enjoy the same rights to travel, employment, housing, and participation in all aspects of daily life that people without disabilities enjoy. The collective knowledge and experience of GDUI's members drives constructive dialogue, breaking down barriers, and opening doors for men and women who live and work proudly and independently, partnered with well-trained guide dogs. GDUI is an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. I have edited frequent traveler Ron Brooks's letter to the ECB email lists for length. First, I agree that the problem of fake and or out of control service and support animals must be addressed. I've personally been on a flight with three other so-called service animals, and going by the barking and carrying on I heard in the departure lobby, I think it's fair to say that at least two of them were about as real as a $3 bill. So I get Delta's frustration and Delta's rationale for its planned actions. However, I believe that their actions are doomed to fail, and in any event, they are missing the point. Here's why. Number one, it's not just about the animals and their handlers. Delta's approach rests on the notion that by requiring a couple of pieces of paper, it will solve the problem. This could not be further from the truth. For years, Delta has had the law on its side. Although the Air Carriers Access Act is pretty permissive about what constitutes a service animal, the law does have remedies which airline personnel can use to address out-of-control animals. There are current requirements that animals not block another's passenger's safe egress. There are rules that the animal be under the control of its handler. There are prohibitions on an animal taking up a seat. However, these are the behaviors that Delta most frequently mentions when supporting its new rules. Come on, Delta, why should you have the right to limit access for legitimate service animal handlers when you're not even taking advantage of the laws already on the books? If an animal is out of control, ban it. If an animal damages a plane, fine the owner. If an animal causes harm, arrest the owner and prosecute. Go ahead and tighten the definition of what constitutes a service animal, but don't use rules to take away the rights of the innocent. Just punish the guilty, something you can already do today. By the way, requiring paper won't solve any of the foregoing issues. Presenting a health certificate and an affidavit will not prove anything, other than the offending animal is healthy and rabies-free. Furthermore, the online fake service animal industry will end up making even more money than they already do, cranking out certificates and vests and ID cards and all the rest of the fake gear that legitimizes these fake animals. All you will really be doing is covering your backsides for when the more adequately documented fake animals do something really bad. Ultimately, the real answer for misbehaving animals is good old-fashioned justice. Drop the hammer, but drop it on the guilty, not everyone else. Number two, the federal government can largely solve this problem. In 2011, the U.S. Department of Justice redefined the very vague definition of service animal, which had been written into the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA. It's the same vague definition which is currently undermining travel in all sectors of U.S. life, from public transit to the planes flying overhead. The U.S. Department of Justice defines a service animal as a dog, or in some cases a miniature horse, which is individually trained to perform a specific task or tasks of daily living for a person with a disability. This definition eliminates all untrained animals, and it eliminates all exotic animals. No more pigs, chickens, ducks, turkeys, snakes, iguanas, or anything else with feathers or fins or fur. All gone. Unfortunately, the U.S. Department of Transportation, which oversees public transit and air travel, has not adopted this definition. Instead, the U.S. Department of Transportation clings to the vague, almost impossible to manage definition of old, and that all by itself is doing more to hamper the airline's ability to manage the fake service animal issue than any 10 bad animals could do in 10 years. Simply put, the U.S. Department of Transportation needs to conform its definition of service animal to that of the Department of Justice. Oh, and that would mean one less duplicative regulation, which is definitely a win in just about anyone's book. Number three, Delta Airlines can't pull this off. In a past work life, I used to travel almost daily, several times per week, 40 or more weeks per year. I routinely booked my travel just a day or two before departure. I often changed flights at the very last minute because of a change in schedule. I remember one time flying home to Phoenix from Philadelphia, only to land and have a voicemail to be in Chicago early on the next day. I literally went home, did laundry, and repacked for the trip back to the airport. Under Delta's new rules, I would be unable to do my job. And even if I could, how would Delta manage its end of the process? How are they going to apply the right documents to the right passenger on the right flight? How are they going to ensure that if I change flights, my documents go with me? How are they going to manage the inevitable loss of documents? Come on, they lose bags all the time, and they've had lots of experience with bags. When there is a dispute at the counter between a passenger who affirms that he has provided documents and an agent who can't find them, how is Delta going to resolve the matter? And what of the extra cost for travelers with service animals? In my state, rabies vaccinations are only required every 3 years. I may not have a recent, within 1 year, health certificate. Does that mean I have to go to the vet and pay an extra charge to the vet just so I can travel? Now, how fair is that? The simple answer is that this policy may work on paper. It will not work on the ground or in the air. It's too cumbersome for both sides. It's fraught with places where it can and will break, and it virtually guarantees an endless number of angry disputes between customers and agents, which will serve only to poison Delta's relationships with not only its disabled customers, but with other customers as well. Meanwhile, the occasional air traveler with his or her pampered pet will only be too happy to play the paperwork game, meaning that no problem ever got solved. On a completely different subject, a second chance at sight. Blind North Dakota man hopes high-tech chip camera system gives him a measure of sight. Published in the Bismarck Tribune, published by Helmut Schmidt Forum News Service on January 28, 2018. Dateline Horace. Retinitis pigmentosa robbed Alan Peterson of his sight and some of his independence. Now, cutting-edge technology promises to give him back a little bit of both. Today, the 73-year-old Horace Mann will have surgery at the University of Minnesota Medical Center Fairview to have an electronic implant attached to the retina of his eye that, paired with a camera on a special set of glasses, could give him the ability to once again recognize shapes and forms, edges of doorways, people in front of in patterns of light. He'll be the eighth person to get the system implanted at the U of M in Minneapolis. It isn't like normal sight. There isn't any color vision. I see what the camera sees. I will have to turn my head so the camera will focus light on that chip, Peterson said. But after decades of finding it difficult to even tell if it's light or dark out, he's excited about the possibilities of this bionic eye, especially after having talked with people who now use the Argus II retinal prosthesis system by Second Sight. You can walk independently. I won't be able to shed my cane. You'll have to be able to let people know you're not operating with normal eyes. But I will be able to travel much more independently than I can at this time, Peterson said. One of the people I talked to, she likes it because she's a cook, and she can see things and can cook and see the things that she needs to use, he said. Peterson and his wife Judy have 3 adult children and 3 grandchildren. I'm hoping that I can see faces a little bit. I haven't seen my children since they were little guys, he said. From normal to nothing, retinitis pigmentosa is a rare genetic disease that causes loss of sight, though there is no history of it in his family, Peterson said. Peterson was raised on a dairy farm south of Brandon, Minnesota, near Alexandria, and says he had a fairly normal sight. After graduating from high school, he went to the University of Minnesota Morris, where he earned degrees in biology and chemistry. He and Judy married in 1971. He eventually received a doctorate in veterinary medicine from the University of Minnesota St. Paul. He was an assistant professor in the NDSU Department of Veterinary Medicine when he was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, though he had already noticed some night blindness about 5 years earlier. It didn't cause him a lot of problems at first, but a couple of years later, night driving became a problem. Then he started losing his field of vision. It got down to the point at the end I could only see a very narrow field of vision, part of a letter or on a page of print, Peter said, and he gave up reading. At age 45, he started learning Braille, and he learned how to use a white cane and a computer without sight. Over time, he's relied on tape recorders and other audio equipment. He still enjoys television with an audio description service. Peterson said he had some resentment about losing his sight. You drop something on the floor and you have to get down on your hands and knees. You get frustrated when things like that happen, he said. I haven't been happy about losing my sight, but I've come to terms with it. Peterson found out about the Argus II system from Dr. Lance Bergstrom of the Bergstrom Eye and Laser Clinic in Fargo. Bergstrom had gone to a meeting in Chicago and saw some people who were using the Bionic Eye system. He encouraged Peterson to see if the system would work for him. He has been the prime motivator for making this happen, Peterson said. How it works. According to Second Sight, the Argus II works by electrically stimulating the retina to induce visual perception in blind people. A miniature video camera in the patient's glasses sends video to a small patient worn computer. The video is processed and transformed into instructions sent to the glasses via a cable. The instructions are then transmitted wirelessly to an antenna in the retinal implant. The signals are then sent to the electrode array, which emits small pulses of electricity. These pulses bypass the damaged photoreceptors and stimulate the retina's remaining cells, which transmit the visual information along the optic nerve to the brain, allowing the wearer to see patterns of light. Over time, patients learn to interpret these visual patterns. I'm a bit apprehensive about it, but I know they've done it before, Peterson said. Pretty experimental stuff. I'm mostly comfortable with it. Time to heal first. After the chip is implanted, Peterson will have to heal for 2 to 3 months before he begins training to use the Argus II. He'll also be part of a study for the Bionic Eye system, he said. Judy Peterson is excited for her husband. It should be something wonderful, we're hoping, Judy said. She's hoping it will add to his independence and help him see things he hadn't seen at all for years. Peterson still keeps an office at NDSU and does a lot of volunteer work. He's a development director for the North Dakota Association of the Blind, a board member for the American Council for the Blind, a member of the Horace Lyons Club, and is active in his church. Still, he's looking forward to a greater degree of independence. I'm pretty self-sufficient at this point, but I'm always looking for something that will help me to a greater degree. I'm not a person who is static. I'd like to move ahead and move on, Peterson said. This is going to be an adventure. We're starting the adventure at this point, he said. Well, I won't have time to read you the joke, but it's a really good one, and I promise I'll read it next time. Kendra Schaber, redwing731@gmail.com, is looking for a little support. Hi, all. I'm studying to become a climatologist. I also happen to be blind myself. I've never heard of a blind climatologist before, and I'm wondering if they're out there. Also, because of my field of study, I'm looking for a blind climatologist to gather more information on their experience, both in their education and their current experience as a climatologist. If anyone knows a blind climatologist, or you are one, please let me know. My contact information, redwing731@gmail.com, phone 971-599-9991. Thank you. Blessed be. Kendra Schaber, National Federation of the Blind, Capital Chapter, Salem, Oregon. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Author unknown. We've run out of time for today's episode of Vision News. Please be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.